Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is going on, everyone? Mike Singer and Mike Goolsby here for this week's Mike Goolsby Show. A couple things to talk about, Mike. Maybe talk some football, some Notre Dame football.
There was a game last night. Yeah, there was a game last night.
If we have to talk about it. Like Joey says, folks, please do hit the thumbs up on this video and subscribe to our YouTube channel yet if you have not done so. Subscribe, like, head to blueandgold.com. Promotion going on $10 through August 31st, 2023. And if you're listening via podcast, appreciate you as well. Please do leave us a kind rating if you like what you hear. I'm just going to sit back. And I'm just going to let you go on your own. I'm going to switch the layout to a solo Mike Goolsby layout.
Oh, I like to see your reaction sometimes. We're not on split screen, folks. I can only see myself. But back to the like thing real quick, the like button. You know, you go back, Mike, and like watch the shows back. The number of views doesn't marry up with the number of likes. Like our like to viewership ratio is like lower than Drew Pine's like completion percentage, right? It's not good. Then we get 10,000 views and 600 likes. It's like that like number should be higher. But to start this off, man, like go back. How long ago does the off season seem, right? Like all the fanfare, you know, we've seen all the videos, you know, Freeman's getting picked. Is Reese going to stay? Is Reese going to follow Coach Kelly down to LSU? He makes an emotional decision to return to the team. All is well. There's a little bit of leakage in the coaching staff, but we've got our core group together. We're going to go kick some butt. Another thing that happened in the offseason was that killer video that Isaiah Foskey, who up to this point has kind of been a better actor than he has been a pass rusher throughout the course of the season. But they did that funny spoof, he and Michael Mayer and Coach Freeman on The Hangover. This is to really set up the Shamrock Series game in Vegas. And like the irony isn't lost on me, bro. Like we came into this Stanford game hungover from said BYU game. It's so ironic. But that was a bad loss, an uninspired team, a lazy crowd. And folks, I'm running out of excuses because I've always said, Mike, as long as you and I have been doing this, those day games at Notre Dame Stadium can be somewhat difficult to get up for as a player. But this was a night game, and to come out that flat, I don't have an excuse. I'm going to spend the next hour trying to come up with some, you know, different hypotheses and theories as to what's going on. But that was a really bad loss. You know, I'm texting Tim Hyde all day. And, you know, you like to say sometimes in football, Mike, out of all the colloquialisms that there is, like, it's not how you start, it's how you finished. So how did we start this game? Like, you know, your captain, like, well, with a false start. We started the game, first play, false start. So it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Well, how did we finish the game? You know, taking a sack. You know, 2.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. We got to go down and at least kick a field goal to tie the game up. We get the ball with 2 minutes and 30 seconds on our end zone. Takes us a minute and a half. I'm sorry?
That would have been a win, right? 16-14.
Well, sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, we take a sack. We throw the ball on a 6-yard stop route on a 4th and 8. So it was bad to start and it was bad to finish. And it was just a lot of, it was just a crap sandwich, man. It was a bad game.
Where is there one area that you think you can put the biggest blame, whether it's Pine, a different position group, Reese, Golden, Freeman, I'm not. For me, I think it's just if you have a well-oiled machine, it's not clicking. This is what happens. And I think there was a Pine did not have a good game, but I think there was a lot more than just Pine that struggled offensively for the Irish. So what do you think, Mike?
Well, what's not going to be, we're not going to be overly critical, but Pine played like trash. Pine was bad. And if everybody's going to throw Tyler Buchner, a first time starter, underneath the bus, he can't do this. He can't do this. We need Pine. Tyler Buchner would have won us that game. There's multiple instances where he would have. I mean, there's a play in the second quarter where I think it's 3rd and 18 and Pine takes off. This is after they took the touchdown away because Tyree was an offer on the line of scrimmage. We get back, you know, Pine scrabbles for a 16-yard gain. Then we go to the 4th and 2 jet sweep to Thomas. Buchner would have scored on that play. Just on that scramble play, he would have scored. So Pine played horrible. Pine played horrible. Horrible. Like he missed Lindsey deep. He missed Merriweather deep. He missed Styles 2 or 3 times. He missed his – I mean, him and Michael Mayer have such like a symbiotic connection. They're best friends. I mean, just imagine the hundreds of – not thousands of balls those two have thrown and caught together. And he's missing Mayer when it counts. So Pine had a bad day, took a sack at the worst time possible to close the game out. We're maybe going to put some points up before the end of the second half. He gets strip sacked. Just a bad game. So he gets a lot of the blame just to keep everything 100, as the kids would say. If Tyler Buchner is going to have to get beat up in the media and get beat up on message boards and get beat up by Notre Dame fans, then it's Pine's turn to like kind of get brought out behind the woodshed. So Pine played like shit. The offensive game plan was terrible. We're back to that sort of dysfunction of
what are we
like? What are we? What is our identity? I mean, up to this point, it's like, get a couple yards on 1st and 2nd down, hopefully, and then we're going to throw it to Michael Mayer. I started to track, and I know Tim will do a better job than me. I don't have the attention span, but like, I think we went to Michael Mayer 6, 7, 8 times on 3rd down. I mean, that's our offense. And furthermore, you know, the broadcast and people are like, well, they're taking Michael Mayer away. Not necessarily. They left him in one-on-one coverage. It wasn't like they had him bracketed. I mean, you had a safety over the top, but he doesn't run deep routes typically anyway. It was one-on-one coverage.
I think they keyed on him more than
BYU,
but yeah, there were still plenty of one-on-one opportunities for sure.
There were still plenty of one-on-one opportunities. And if he wasn't covered, you know, Pine missed some reads. So I've heard a lot of people say it, and it's true. I mean, if this offense isn't just so, if the play and the execution isn't just so, isn't just perfect, we can't execute. Like, Pine can't get it done. And you've heard me say this, Michael. When I talk about that, like, element of backyard ball, a little bit of spontaneity, you need that. You need a guy that can create plays, and we don't have it. And I do want to get into, like, quarterback recruiting and this
– yeah.
Whole picture, but and the defense again, I guess, played good. I mean, based off of like the point total, but yeah, there's just it's not like I don't know, I can't recall the last time that we've just had a 3 and out on defense, boom, give the ball right back to the offense. It's always like, we're giving up 6 yards on 1st down, you know, they'll get a couple 1st downs, then we get them off the field. Yeah. Another game without any interceptions or anything like that. I think there was one tip pass looking at the statistics on the defensive side of the ball. I think we had one sack. You know, and Stanford's offensive line isn't good. Plus, they're missing some starters. So, just a classic example, Mike. Dude, one of these weeks, let's just not film this Sunday night and we'll just go back and we'll play the critique or the breakdown of like the Marshall game and we'll just like dub in Marshall for Stanford. Because like we are literally going to have almost the same talking points. It's almost going to be a verbatim discussion of what we've done, you know, half a dozen times before.
Yeah,
coming off these weird losses.
When you said the 3-0 thing, I was thinking, just 1-3-0. Yeah, I thought there would have been more. So it's
– and some of that stuff, like, you know, I love to talk linebackers. I mean, again, J.D. Bertrand, I root for the kid. He does play super hard. But the more and more you dial into the run game, our run defense, schematically – kids are misaligned. Like if a kid's supposed to be in a 30, let's say he's supposed to stack the guard, like he's half a yard too far to the right or to the left where he gets cut off. And then sometimes there's no place to spill the ball to. If we're forcing the ball, let Kali flow over the top, there's no force. You know, they ran a shovel pass and like JD fell down and then he's supposed to force the ball back to Kali and he jumps inside. It was just like, ugh. Like, it makes me sick. I've turned into a masochist, bro. Like, I've watched this game three times I've watched this game. And yeah, it's just really, I'm not even like as upset or, you know, angry as I was after the Marshall loss. I'm like, kind of just bummed, man. It's just so disappointing, you know?
That was me and Tim after the game. It's just like, we really got to come in here and talk about this shit. Like, really?
Yeah. And I don't, like I said, I don't like to get into the, I don't want to be that guy that gets into like X's and O's, and we don't really have the format to kind of do it and do it well. But it's just like our offense is, if we're going to throw the ball, everybody goes vertical and then you run, you have some sort of one-on-one crosser underneath. This week, we try to run some inside power where the guard doesn't pull and, you know, I can never get my fingers right on the screen. He doesn't pull and kick out. He kind of wraps up, and we're supposed to hit that downhill.
Right.
And it's like you're playing right into Stanford's hands. Like, they're not the most athletic defense. Back to our defense. What's this running back's name for Stanford? I can never remember his last. Filkins. So we gave up almost 100 yards to a white running back named Casey Filkins. You know, who's also happens to be their punt returner. So let's now go back to talk about our offense. Casey Filkins can take 31 carries and return, handle punt return duties. And we've got to rotate three backs still. You know what I'm saying? Like, if Casey Filkins can manage the load for a Stanford versus a Notre Dame defense, I'd like to assume that we could maybe cut down that rotation to two backs, you know, whether it be Estime, who disappeared for most of the first half, and or Diggs, and then let's use Tyree as a kind of a gadget guy. But like the offensive rotation, this syncing up the play call with the personnel that's in the backfield all season has never made sense to me. So it's bad. But on the plus side, we got to see Tobias Merriweather, Mike.
Dude, I was wrong on that one for sure.
What do you mean you were wrong?
Well, my thought was, I was kind of backing the coaches, being like, they're not playing him. I guess they have a good reason, right? Because he's more talented. We know he's more talented than Matt Salerno, who I don't think really played last night. You know, I think he's more talented than Jaden Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's more talented than Brayden Lindsey, but it's just a matter of, you know, bring him along and all that kind of crap. But
yeah, he showed a little bit of polish on that, where on his touchdown catch, where, again, you know this, bro, as a possession guy. You know, like where he stemmed inside, wide in the corner. He made that, yeah, he made that corner flip his hips. Like, that was pretty impressive to me. There's a little bit of skill there. That
pine overthrew him. I want to say Merriweather was working through the slot, and it was a, you know, kind of like a, you know, he worked outside. It was a thing of beauty. So I either said that the coaches, you just got to trust them, or they're idiots.
Yeah, Coach Jason Garrett called that a inside fade. I would call that just fucking up and out. But
yeah.
Pine was bad.
Made the wrong call. Or maybe just in a week he's magically gotten ready. I don't know. But Mike, we have a few super chats, so we're gonna tackle these. And folks, if you do drop a super chat, this is only if you're watching live on YouTube. Anything that you want us to discuss, we will go ahead and do that. So Milton Fan says, Mike G, do you feel it's difficult/hard to criticize Tommy Reese since you are both former alum? Not saying you go easy on him, just curious.
Milton's reading my mind a little bit, and we are going to talk about Reese, and I'm going to be more critical of Reese as a recruiter than I am a play caller, because a lot of this, it is a 50-50 balance, Milton, between the play call and the execution, right? I don't think that Reese's play calls seem to leave like any wiggle room for any sort of like chaos created. It's like, this isn't a video game. Like, this is life. Stuff happens. People miss blocks, whatever. I have a difficult time criticizing Reese and criticizing Coach Freeman for a lot of reasons, because I'm an ex-player. Like, it's just not in my nature to talk poorly about my coaches. It's much easier for me to go in on players, AKA like my teammates, than it is for me to go at my coach. It's almost like a respect thing that's just like been drilled into me. But no, it doesn't have anything to do. You know, I've got Coach Reese's cell phone. We've talked a couple times. Like, I don't really have a strong relationship with the guy. I root for everybody, but I do think sometimes he needs to get out of his own way. Like that 4th-and-2 call, I don't hate it at face value. I don't hate that jet sweep. I might have had somebody else carry the ball, maybe yeah. Like a Styles, maybe a little bit, quicker twitch, more sudden athlete. But then also it's like, I swear we got a 230-pound running back that I feel fairly confident we can pick up 2 yards off tackle or something there. So it's stuff like that that just kind of drives me nuts. And then with Reese, it's like, I thought we had an identity. We're a power run team and we go play action. I thought that was our identity and I thought it worked. And then this week we're back to like, 13 personnel and or empty. It's just, there's no consistency in like the statistics like shows that proves that out, dude. We average like 23 points a game. It's bad. And I know he doesn't have a full cupboard. And this is like, I've kind of been defending Reese. He doesn't have a lot of weapons to work with.
Why doesn't he?
Well, Coach Kelly was a lazy recruiter. And I think that Reese has some of that in his, DNA. And guess what? In the NFL, Mike, you don't have to recruit.
Yeah.
So I don't think we see Coach Reese back next year. And I think that'd probably be a mutual breakup.
Ooh. Say it again, Goolsby, full screen.
Is that a hot take?
I don't know.
No, I think this is, I don't know if folks know who Bill Reese is. Do you know who Bill Reese is? That's Tommy yeah. Reese's father.
Yes.
Bill Reese has been in and out of the NFL, around the NFL, its entire coaching / scouting / executive career. I mean, there is an absolute, the same way Jack Collinsworth, AKA Ichabod Crane, had a runway to get into the booth at NBC, Reese already has that runway. We're just biding time till he gets to the NFL in whatever capacity. So I don't see him back.
All right, Chris says, for the first time, I'm over Freeman area. Staff's garbage. Fire everyone. Are you on the fire everyone train, Mike?
No, I'm not. But it's just, Tim and I were texting. We hang, 20-something points on BYU. They go play Arkansas next week. Arkansas scores 52. I'm just so tired of watching run-of-the-mill FBS football program score 40 points. It's like everybody else can do it. It's just like, what is the deal? I do not understand it. It's just maddening. Like, how can you, Prince Kali shows up, gets a little bit of run today. Prince Kali blocks a punt. And then statistically, Mike, somebody could dig into this, but I know statistically, if you're on the team that gets a punt blocked, the odds of you winning are like 87. -1%. I mean, it's like you're not going to win if you get a punt block. So we block a punt and we still lose the game. And we don't even kick a field goal after that. It's just like, what? It's crazy to me.
All right. We are going to hear from our sponsors. Augie's Locker Room. I think this is Mike's favorite part of the show. Learning a little bit about Augie's Locker Room. If you are looking for that perfect gift for that Notre Dame fan or for yourself, there's one place to go, and that is Augie's Locker Room, which is located less than a mile away from Notre Dame Stadium and was named the best Notre Dame's collectibles in the country. If you are a passionate Irish fan and you're looking for that special Notre Dame piece to complete your rec room, go to AugiesLockerRoom.com. They have a wide selection of Notre Dame stadium pieces, jersey helmets, helmets, autographs, one-of-kind Rockne items, exclusive Joe Montana signed items, which you can actually see on the screen right now. So that's a good timing there. Augie is partnered with famous sculptor Jerry McKenna to be the exclusive dealer of his Notre Dame bronze statues. The statues you've seen around the stadium, Augie has Jerry McKenna's artwork for sale in his store as well. And if Augie doesn't have it in his store, he will find it for you. Visit AugiesLockerRoom.com or stop in at 1811 South Bend Avenue and see the vintage helmet display dating back to 1890. AugiesLockerRoom.com or call him up 574-277-NDND.
Okay. One time, Mike, I moved, right? I moved several times, but I paid a company to move me. Right, move my things, and I had several of these like big Tupperware bins full of like a lot of my ND gear, and somebody stole them.
No,
yeah, because the move, like, the load, dude. I've always, so yeah. If Augie can find stuff, Augie, can you find like all I have for my Notre Dame career? I have my helmet, and that's really about it. Can you go? You know,
if Notre Dame beats Clemson, can you wear the helmet for the whole show on Sunday?
Yeah, as long as I can get my ear thing in, sure, why not? If it leads to more super chats, we got bills to pay, folks. Yeah. So, yeah, I need to track down Augie. I'll be at that Clemson game. Maybe I'll just wear it to the game.
Sneak on the field, Mike.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Maybe throw a wig on you and, you know, wear number 8. Can you be Maris Lefo?
I'd have to try.
Okay. All right, Dan Muller.
I'd have to try.
Yeah. He says, offensive coordinator, dive play, then option route to Mayer. Estime doesn't play till second half. Tobias gets 3 plays, wide open twice, and back to the bench. Now, the Tobias one, yeah, you would think after the touchdown, it's like, all right, let's roll with the hot hand here. That was confusing. With the Estime thing, so pull up the stats here. You had Estime 8 rushes, 57 yards, touchdown. Diggs 9 rushes, 57 yards. Tyree 8 for 35. Yeah. I really think, Mike, in this modern-day college football, you have all these talented players. You want to keep them. You just play all of them and to try to keep them happy. Going back to, like, why Estime isn't playing, like, I think they're trying to keep him fresh for when the defense is more worn down, and that's why they're starting with Diggs or Tyree. I understand where it's coming from, but still, if Estime's, you know, maybe your second best player on your offense, like offense,
and more importantly, football is a meritocracy, right? Like, you sort of like earn your playing time. You with me on that? And it's like, what we're doing, everything is equitable. Like, Houston Griffin still plays. Like, why? What has he done in recent history, if ever, to earn reps to be on the field at Notre Dame Stadium? So, like, the way they're doing this rotation, it's like equitable versus being doled out off of merit. And then the other thing about Estime, I think I've said this the last 2 weeks, I get the sense that he has a little bit of that Kyron Williams just kind of like heart in his DNA. So, like, the team is flat. There's no juice. The stadium's flat. It's like, maybe he can spark us, right? Versus like, well, no, I've got this play drawn up for Diggs, or I've got this play drawn up. Like, okay, you got to be able to, like, take the whole thing into account, coaches, and be like, we got nothing going on. Who can give us a spark outside of Michael Mayer, you know? So I think if for that reason alone, you know, Estime should be kind of like your lead guy, because I do feel like he brings more energy and more juice to the team.
Did we see much 2-back sets? I feel like I don't recall.
And it works. But yeah, to your point about to the super chat there in regards to Tobias, Like you'll watch college football, Mike, and there's oftentimes they'll run the same play back to back. Like we had success or we just missed it. They'll call the same play again. It's like if Tobias only knows two routes, then let him go out there and run those two routes if he's getting open. And the way teams play us, and Tim will talk about this until the cows come home, but the way teams play Notre Dame is they flood the box. And they dare Drew Pine and his noodle arm to push it further than 35 yards down the field. He overthrows. He overcompensates. He either overthrows or he underthrows. He had more underthrows today than he did overthrows. And I think, I actually watched the game again for the third time. Dare I say, Jack Cohen might be a better athlete than Drew Pine. And I looked up. I was like, what did Jack run his 40 in? Jack Cohen ran his 40 in a 4.9 at the combine. And he was a scholarship lacrosse kid. Like, I'm really disappointed at the lack of athleticism. We knew he didn't have any height. We knew he didn't have a strong arm. But, that little clip I sent you and Tim, like, the pocket's collapsing around him, and he just, like, falls forward. Like, he just, like, fell down. It was like, ugh. It's brutal, man.
Do you want to get in? And then,
the killer thing is, too, I know a lot about Stanford's quarterback now because, like, I know he went on this mission trip to wherever. Of course, I forgot. I've met his wife now during the broadcast. Beautiful, right? Beautiful couple. I'm glad I'm watching Stanford. I'm glad I'm seeing wedding photos of the opposing quarterback during an NBC broadcast for a Notre Dame game. But their quarterback, 6'6", 230, stud, you know, stud. 5'9", 197. Brutal. Any more super chats?
Whose fault is that? You want Pine to be 6'3"? Why don't you get all your other Pine shots out? Let's just get them all out. Go ahead, get them all out.
Do I want Pine to be 6'3"? Of course I do.
Yeah, well, it's not. What do you want him to do about it?
Well,
stand on his tippy toes. Put a book back there.
Why is he here? Why is he the starting quarterback at Notre Dame?
That's the discussion.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody's gonna poo-poo on Tyler Buchner, this and that.
Dude,
but it's like, folks,
poo-pooing on Tyler Buchner.
Not anymore. But after after he gets thrown to the wolves,
Mike, you know this. We've been doing this long enough. You know football. When a team loses, unless they had a really good offensive game, it's you're attacking the quarterback, the offense coordinator, the head coach. That's it. Defense.
Nobody's going after the head coach, but I'm telling you.
Read our chat, then, man. Everybody's saying fire him. Call Matt Rhule.
I can't see the chat, Mike. All I can see is you. You got mop on the top of your head.
I'm informing you that. I mean, it's just how it goes. You know, it's just what it is. But
it's bad. But everybody went at like, okay, Tyler can't do this. Tyler looks nervous. He can't throw. He can't do this. It's like, I'm telling you, and you were like, well, I can't tell who has the stronger arm. It's like, that's intellectually dishonest for you to be like, I can't tell who has a stronger arm, who has a quicker release. If you can't see that, I got to get you coached up.
I'll tell you that I'll take Drew Pine's release over Tyler Buchner's every single day of the week. For sure. Mechanically, Drew Pine is superior to Tyler Buchner. Now you're talking arm strength, like who can throw the ball farther?
I'm talking about who can put zip on the ball in terms of like that ball goes, you know, all 40-yard throws are not the same. One gets there quicker. One gets there with less of an arc, right? That's what I'm talking about with somebody can whip a ball, you know. Like Mike Vick didn't have a great arm, great mechanics, right? And all these quarterback gurus and stuff like that. I mean, like old school quarterback play isn't even a thing anymore. Like they used to take you to step into your throw and all that. Now like watch Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers throw a ball. They leave their feet. They're up on their tippy toes. It all comes from your hips now because the pockets are so condensed. Drew Pine needs a huge clean pocket. He's super short. His legs are very far apart and he needs that big windup. Sure, it looks pretty at a 7-on-7 deal, but for real life football, it ain't it, man. I'm telling you, they're teaching quarterbacks to throw off a narrow base and it comes from your hips. Watch Aaron Rodgers though. He's always on his tippy toes to get even more lift on the ball. So right,
I think that's the solution. Get Pine some taller cleats and let him be taller back there.
Well,
I am not. I would not concede that in the 15 to 20 yard range that Pine's a better throw of the football than Buckner. I would not concede that at all.
Oh, let's talk 5 to 10, baby. Let's talk 5 to 10 range.
Maybe like
that's Drew Pine's wheelhouse. 5 to 10, man. Forget 15 to 20, dude. That's a little risky proposition for me. You know, 40 plus, forget about it.
So, Mike, you're very, you know, not a big Pine fan.
I'm just defending Tyler Buckner. No, it's not that. I'm literally just defending Tyler Buckner more so than I am going in on Drew Pine. Like I was rooting, I was so excited for Tyler Buckner, and I need to let it go.
Call him noodle arm. I mean, that's a personal. That has nothing to do with Tyler Buckner.
Well, I'm saying because you said that Drew Pine had as strong, if not a stronger arm than Buckner. That's why I said that.
I think, again,
underthrown balls all over the place this past game. If it's not a crossing route to Mayer.
But you
they've done that so many times where literally Mayer just goes like this and the ball's perfect. They've done that so many times. They could do it in complete darkness. They have just they're synced up. But if it's anything outside of that, it's not great. I mean, I didn't love that ball to Tobias. It was a little underthrown. Tobias had to cradle it as wide open as he was. And that ball needs to be on a line. It needs to be a rope versus, you know, these. Anyways, let's move on to something else, Mike.
Because now we're criticizing touchdown passes. They're few and far between, Mike. Let's just take one and we can get them.
That's fair. Very fair.
Tim says, is it too soon to discuss who sits during the bowl game, assuming there will be one? Tim, I don't know. I would assume Mayer doesn't play, and I don't know who else. Probably your boy Lindsey. I don't know. Just kidding.
Yeah, it would be Mayer if anything. And I would completely respect that decision. And furthermore, like going back to Coach Reese, like he owes Mayer some money in terms of like, if Mayer wasn't in this offense, you know, we have, Reese is getting fired. Or I mean, we have no offense without Michael Mayer. It's almost like, you know, when we saw it's almost akin to like when Kevin Sumlin was at Texas A&M and he had Johnny Manziel and he caught lightning in a bottle, right? Johnny Manziel wins the Heisman. Kevin Sumlin gets a promotion. And then I couldn't even tell you where Kevin Sumlin's coaching now, but he made tens of millions of dollars off the back of Johnny Manziel in that one magical season, you know, she was fired shortly thereafter, but he can, you know, the all check right. Still got cash.
We got the crack staff looking up Kevin Sumlin.
Producer extraordinaire. Mike Singer.
Please drop in the comments if you're live with us where Kevin Sumlin is coaching. I will be stunned if anyone gets this. And don't look it up. Don't look it up. Don't be a little turd.
But is that, did you understand that case study that I'm using here in terms of Reese and Mayer and Mayer's importance to that offense? As like, again, Manziel, different position playing quarterback, but
dude, where is Notre Dame? Like, seriously, what's the record? If they don't have it.
I mean, we're only averaging 22, 23 points a game or whatever it is.
Are they yikes. Are they 1-5? Like, that maybe just be, I think it was the Cal game where he had a couple catches. I mean, so are they 1-5? Gosh.
So, but yeah, we can talk quarterback recruiting. You know, I think
a couple more super chats, Mike.
Yeah, please.
Maltavia says Marcus Freeman is visibly upset in the postgame presser, rightfully so. Pep rally before the game. Freeman said these guys won, and I quote, pretty bad, elbow flat.
So Freeman's saying that the guys on the team like the pregame pep rally?
I don't know.
Okay. I heard bits and pieces of the presser. I think that pep rallies – What's a fun analogy? I think, like, Mike, if you get your wife flowers every Sunday, it becomes a little less special, right?
Sure.
So I think there's the spontaneity makes it cooler, right? So it's like, let's have a pep rally before the Clemson game, sure. But before the Marshall game, before the Stanford game, I don't know.
Dude, I think they're ridiculous. Why are they the day before the game? Why do we do them?
They used to be, when I was there, it was the night before the game.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm pretty sure it was like before the home opener, they did a pep rally the night before, and they did that thing the day. I don't get it. This isn't high school. We don't need pep rallies. What the hell? Go do it after the game. I don't get it. People are talking about the Kevin Sumlin thing. He is in the USFL. He is the head coach and general manager of the Houston Gamblers. So
can somebody else look up what his buyout at Texas A&M was? Let's go to the next super chat. What was his buyout to leave A&M?
Susan, a fan of the show, she
asked, yeah, hey Susan,
execution a result of poor coaching or talent level, or the simple answer both?
I think it's like, when we get to execution, there has to be a standard. And that's like coaching, like you teach, that's drilled in the off season, the standard in terms of how we play. So, but to have like a captain jumping off sides twice now in the season, that like notable false start penalties from Jarrett Patterson. But yeah, execution comes down to like being taught the standard. This is the way we do things. And then from there, it's execution. That falls into the player's lap. It's just like, you know, when Chris Tyree is on, he's supposed to be off, or vice versa. That's on Chris Tyree, right? And I'm sure that was reinforced, you know, throughout the course of the week. But yeah, execution comes to a degree, it's coaching, but ultimately it comes down to the player to like make a tackle or whatever. I don't think the coaches need to get you up for games. I've heard that before, where teams come out flat. You know, that was a big critique of Brian Kelly, like teams would come out flat. So I'm not a huge believer in that. Like a pregame speech isn't gonna be resonating in my mind when it's, you know, fourth and two and I gotta make a stop as an inside linebacker. I'm not thinking about that. So I don't know if that answers Susan's question, but thank you for it.
Yep. Thanks, Susan. One from Eric, as I think people are more frustrated with Tyree starting over the other backs and doing nothing.
Yeah, and I still like Tyree. I'm still a fan of him. And I still think he's going to play in the NFL. I just do, just because his skill set really fits. Smallish. Like, you can see Tyree playing for the Chiefs or something like that. You can just see it.
Yeah.
But it pains me to watch him run the ball in that – he runs to the sideline, stops, always stops his feet, will turn, and then he goes upfield. It's like, can somebody work with him on like staying square and being able to carry his momentum? Like his speed is his best asset. It gets to the hole almost too quick in terms of the timing of setting up the play, has to stop and then start. It's like, how do we get him to sync it up and actually hit something? You know, perfect timing wise. So, but I just think that like in this game, you were flat. It was noticeable. It was tangible. There was no energy. And it's like, that's when I would just probably lean on Estime and just let's get the motor turned over and let's just start hammering the ball and let's just get some positive momentum. And I think just whatever it is about Estime, his demeanor, his makeup, I think he can really provide that for the team.
Eric, appreciate the super chat. Mike, we got three more. We're going to go rapid fire here.
Yeah.
Andrew, fan of the show, appreciate the super chat. He says, I hate being negative, Mike and Mike, but is this the weakest quarterback room in modern Notre Dame history? So let's go last, I don't know, like 20 years. I'll put you in the modern category, Mr. Goolsby.
Again, RIP Lou, man. Where's Lou when you need him?
Dude,
yeah. Every episode, right? I mean, there's at least one instance. It's like, well, gosh darn it, I need that guy. It's definitely up there. I mean, when I was there, we had Carlisle Holiday that was hurt, and our only backup was a walk-on, Pat Dillingham, who I would still take over Drew Pine. Forgive me. But that was pretty bad. I mean, it was less than ideal. And there wasn't some guys that transferred out, you know, switched positions. So, like, my recruiting class, we had four quarterbacks, one transferred out, one moved to safety and one moved to tight end. But that was pretty bad. But yeah, this now, Andrew, is it's not ideal. And then you couple that with the lack of depth in the wide receiver room, and it's like, what's going on here? So when we get back into recruiting, like, I'd love to see Jeremiah Love commit, Mike. Love to see that, you know, another weapon to add to the arsenal. But I'm kind of, not that I'm tired of it, but it seems like so many of Freeman's signees are on the defensive side of the ball, linebackers and defensive line. It's like, how many offers do we have out to wide receivers? Like, let's offer 50 more of them. Like, let's get the offers out there. We need the numbers.
Three commits at receiver. I think they'll get a fourth in Tayshaun Lyons. Dylan Edwards and Jeremiah Love can both play receiver.
Yeah.
And you got a really good tight end commit. So I just – recruiting, man, it's like one of these things. You've just seen it so many times that you're like, there's nothing about those three receivers right now that's saying that they're going to flip anywhere. But it's just like, I just want to see them sign on the dotted line before I get too excited, you know, because it's a damn good receiver class, dude. It really is.
It's an easy sell. I mean, it's an easy sell. I remember when I was in high school in like University of Illinois, I'll remember sitting there like in my kitchen phone, you know, the old, like the wired or the landline, and like the, whoever was recruiting me from Illinois was like, well, you'd play right here. You'd be playing right now. And I was like a junior in high school. I'm like, well, not going to Illinois. You know, if that's like your standard of play, and Illinois was bad back then. They're having a great season now with Coach Bielema. But that's the messaging to these commits, Mike, is like, hey, Jaden Greathouse, like, you see how bad we need you, and you're going to come in here and be a star. So that's I'm sure the narrative that they're creating. And I think that's a true narrative. I don't even think it's a recruiting BS. I mean, it's true. We need you.
But still, Notre Dame can't get a quarterback in this class, which is, oh man. Which this we're getting through these super chats, and we're going to talk quarterback recruiting. Beefstick is not happy about the team. We'll just leave it at that. Thank you for the super chat, though. Dan Moeller says, Mike, just give me a name in a couple sentences here. Say Reese does go, give an offensive coordinator name and why.
I can't answer that. Dan, I don't have an intelligent answer. I feel bad. I don't know enough to give an honest answer.
Bring back John McNulty, baby. I don't know. I always like McNulty.
Yeah, yeah. I talked to Coach McNulty, got his phone. I actually emailed him two weeks ago. But I would like to see either somebody younger and creative or somebody older and more established. I need either. That's like, I want somebody with some that gray hair factor, or I want somebody that's just kind of novel. And I think it'd be, I think a younger OC would be easier to lure to a Notre Dame just because of, it's amazing to have that on your resume. But I don't have any good names, Dan. I apologize.
All right, we just had a couple super chats come in from Mike and Adam. If you guys have questions, drop it and make sure I catch them. Okay, so yeah, let's talk quarterback recruiting. So this roster on scholarship, you have true freshman Steve Angeli, sophomores Ron Paulus, practice squad arm.
How dare you?
And Tyler Buckner.
How dare you? You're going to come at me for saying Drew's got a noodle arm?
He's a practice.
That's Ron Paulus' son, Mike.
I don't think he's going to play. Do you think he's going to play?
I don't know.
Troll, Mr. Goolsby, bringing out your Mike Singer energy. I love it. And then you got Junior Drew Pine. That's it. Going back to the weak quarterback room. It's not a deep one.
It's three dad bods. That's what that is. Three dad bods.
How dare you disrespect my boy Steve Angeli?
Three dad bods. So I can just as easily see Steve Angeli, you know.
You tread lightly, Mr. Goolsby.
Yeah, there's not a lot of quick twitch out of those three. There's not a lot of dynamic traits out of those three. And I like Angeli. I think he throws a nice ball. I think he's a sneaky athlete, but it's a lot of the same things we said about our boy Drew Pine. So yeah, it's bad, but let's get into like.
All right. I'm reading your notes regarding quarterback recruiting. Who you putting the blame on?
Okay. So Mike, please help me stay on track here.
I got you.
So I wrote down regarding quarterback recruiting, it's Reese's fault. Tommy Rees, based off of his upbringing and background, and he's a bit of a blue blood, as is Drew Pine, right? No fault of their own. But and even Steve Angeli goes to Bergen Catholic, probably from a well-to-do area out there in Jersey. They're a natural fit to go play quarterback at Notre Dame. Would you agree with that, Mike? Sure. Just based off the background, you know, they went to prestigious high schools. It just makes total sense for a kid from Connecticut, Drew Pine, and what his dad does for work. And it's just like they're blue bloods. It's a natural fit to go play quarterback at Notre Dame. Brian Kelly, this is just my hypothesis. Brian Kelly, massive ego, pretentious, pompous asshole that he is. Brian Kelly, also lazy recruiter. Brian Kelly didn't want a five-star Dante Moore potential like ego there, right? Like these kids they're thinking about, I'm about to make tens of millions, $100 million in the NFL. That's their goal. And they have a team around them. Typically, like they got people, they got a posse. So Brian Kelly doesn't want that ego, and he's a lazy recruiter. So like you kind of mix all this stuff together. Reese has some of that BK in his DNA. And I feel like that, like, if Coach Reese is going to offer one of these five-star kids, I don't think that he has the motor to go after him. And I think in the back of his mind, he's upset at the kid. Why wouldn't this kid want to come play at Notre Dame? Right? Because it was such a natural fit for Coach Reese to go play there. Does that make sense? They understand with that blue blood background what Notre Dame is, what it can do for your career, networking, all those things. They automatically get that. Some kid from Texas, the state of Texas or whatever, he might not have that full understanding and grasp of the power of Notre Dame. And it's not just going to be like, oh, please, let me go play there. Your boy, who's the kid that's committed? His name's escaping me. Lloyd Carr. CJ Carr gets it. He gets it.
He does.
Right? He's a bit of like, not a blue blood, but like he gets it. He's like, I'm absolutely going to go play a quarterback. That's very, very rare. You feel me on that? Like a Jimmy Clausen gets it. You know, he's out there in California, like he gets it. So it's a natural fit. So Reese is a lazy recruiter. He's got a little bit of that Brian Kelly kind of DNA, ego, laziness or whatever. And lastly, I think these five-star kids, they don't care about Notre Dame. They don't. They care about themselves. So we're sitting there going, you're a five-star quarterback. Come play at Notre Dame. You're going to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated or whatever, right? They're like, I'm going to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated regardless. Build an offense around me. That's what they care about. You understand? Like Drake May, like I'll go down to the UNC quarterback. Like I'll go to UNC and go get in the Heisman contention and be a top 10 pick. I don't have to go to Notre Dame to do that. Hopefully that makes sense, Mike. I think there's three or four factors in play there. And I just think that, like, with Reese's background, he doesn't get it, what it's going to take to go get one of these special, talented. You got to have a lot of humility to go after a five-star kid that's a potential, you know, top 10 pick in the draft 3-4 years later.
I disagree with everything you just said, and I'm a little pissed.
Okay, go for it.
I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. I've been covering Notre Dame. This is my fourth season, and I remember that, you know, certain kids early on in my time covering Notre Dame, the Irish would be after, of course, is under Kelly, and they want them, and then they don't get them, and it's kind of like we didn't want them anyway. Or totally. Oh, well, if he chose Stanford or Georgia Tech, you know, whatever college that's clearly inferior to Notre Dame in football, it's like, well, then he doesn't deserve to play here, or he would never survive here anyways. That's kind of like letting Notre Dame be the recruiting pitch rather than recruiting. Like I've been covering college football recruiting since I got out of high school. Like this is the only redeemable skill I have, and I've just kind of picked up YouTube here in the past couple years. But
gotten great at it too, bro. Gotten great at it.
All I know is recruiting, and it's like it's really not that hard. If you're the safeties coach at Notre Dame, you're Chris O'Leary. You don't really have to be a good recruiter. You just have to work at it. That's all you have to do is just work at it, because you're cool just by being the safeties coach at Notre Dame. So you just have to work. You just have to work at it.
And that's coming. I'm in sales for a living. You know, I got to walk into a dental office. They don't know who I am. Like you call the high school coach or you called whoever. It's like, yeah, this is Coach O'Leary from Notre Dame. It's like, you're going to talk to whoever you want to talk to.
Mike,
just the way it goes.
So you picked Notre Dame. Was it some big, the staff did an amazing job to pull you away from some other school, or was it you just picked Notre Dame for Notre Dame?
I picked Notre Dame for Notre Dame. Mike, on my official visit, I got ditched. My host, who will remain nameless, ditched me because I didn't want to do what they wanted to do. I was like, I was a little, you know what I'm saying? And I got ditched and then still committed to play there. That's how bad I wanted to go to Notre Dame.
So
right? That's
the Mike Goolsbys of the world are few and far between. It's not that
big. Especially at the quarterback position. And that's what I'm saying. Like,
Or the really, really good ones.
The elite ones. And yeah. CJ Carr is an amazing player, and I can't wait till he gets here. And I think the world of him as a player and as a kid. I really do. I'm very excited for him.
But
I'm just telling you, these elite kids, they do not care about Notre Dame. They want to know what is Texas going to do to build an offense around me? Carr is absolutely an exception, you know, because he gets it. He gets it. He grew up around the game, like, you know, comes from a, you know, good family, all that stuff. Like, he gets it. But I mean, that's my knock on it. And Mike, folks, I'm saying as much as I can say. Right? I'm saying as much as I can say, divulging as much as I can. I'm like trying to walk that line. But that's what it is. That's what it is. It's they're like that. And you could even look at like our linebackers, like it's like we recruited a certain type of kid with a certain type of background because it was going to be easy, you know. And they're fine players, like Drew White's a fine player, JB Bertrand's a fine player, but they're not elite. And it pisses the coaches off, like it hurts their feelings, like they don't want to come to Notre Dame. It's like, well, they might. You got to go recruit them.
What about Jalen Snead? You know, like something like that, or Jeremiah Love.
Well, there was the relationship with the high school coach there, right?
With Snead, yeah, that got you in the door. That doesn't win you the recruitment.
But it's changing. It's changing. But who's the lead recruiter with Jeremiah Love, Mike? It's Marcus Freeman, right? I mean, technically speaking, the way he's handling the recruiting.
I'd argue that.
So, and because – well, I mean, Freeman came out and said that, I'm going to be the lead recruiter. That wasn't the case with Brian Kelly.
No.
Brian Kelly's playing golf, folks.
Yeah. I don't think Brian Kelly's ever a lead recruiter for anybody. And if he was, it was someone else using his phone. Like, come on, if he was texting somebody. But seriously, like Jeremiah Love might be one of the most impressive recruiting wins I've seen for Notre Dame covering the Irish. I mean, Texas A&M really wanted him. And we all know what Texas A&M is doing in recruiting lately. So that's a very impressive win. And I talked about the receivers. It's hard to get too excited because signing day is still 2 months away, but I kind of feel the same thing about Love. So we just have to wait and see a little bit here.
Oh, we've got some great – I mean, and Price got hurt, but Jadarian Price looked, like, sick, dude. You know, like, he's going to be a nice little player. So it's going to get better.
It's going up.
It's going to get better, but if we want to – if you want an answer as to why the quarterback room in, like – under Kelly's tenure, like why have we never had a five-star? Go back and rewind it and listen to it again. That's as best as I can tell you. And that's my, you know, it's not just a random theory. That's what I believe to be true as to why that is.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I did a good job staying on track there, bro.
You know,
working off my notes. I tend to ping pong so much.
You got a great host. Okay. we're up at like 900 people watching live with us. So if you just now started watching here, take a note where you're watching that, where you're at now, and make sure you rewind after we're done and you can watch the beginning, because you miss a lot of good stuff. Please do hit the thumbs up, subscribe. Augie's Locker Room, that's the sponsor for this show. So please head to their website, give them a call, augieslockerroom.com. We are going to just kind of take super chats for the rest of the show. So once we get through them, we'll wrap the show up. Mike Boylson dropped a super chat and said, no, he's just supporting the broadcast with his. So we certainly do appreciate that. Mr. Beefstick says he's 30 years old, and he's afraid that he will die before Notre Dame wins a national championship. I guess it depends on how long you're going to live, Mr. Beefstick.
If he eats too many beef sticks, won't be long. You got to watch that blood pressure, buddy. But I would say there's other things that 30 years old, I just turned 40 there, Beefstick, should focus on other things that need to happen before you die, you know, that you can control.
Wise
is that fair, Mike?
Control what you only worry about what you can control.
Yeah, control what you can control. Yeah. But I want to go back to as we're waiting on super chats, what have you, to come in there, Mike. That last drive of the game, right? So we get the ball back 2 minutes and 30 seconds. We hit Mayer on a crossing pattern, almost dropped the ball. Screen to Diggs, we get a first down. Pine scrambles across the field. So it's at that point, it's second and whatever it was, I forget. We took a minute off the clock and we were on our own 25-yard line still with no timeouts. So when we go back to like execution, Susan had asked that question earlier, is it the players? Like that last drive, that's entirely on Coach Reese. We have no timeouts. We're on our own 10. We got 90 yards to go. We a minute comes off the clock. We're still doing the check with me thing with the sideline. That's poor preparation. Like Bill Belichick would, like his head would explode. The lack of preparation for that scenario going into a game. Making $2 million a year, Coach Reese. Pine gets sacked. Then we throw Pine throws a ball behind Michael Mayer. And then we run that stop route on 4th and 8. Like that was how the game ended. Brutal, dude. Brutal. 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 And another random note I put. David Shaw is always on the one of these ESPN or maybe it's NFL Network, the broadcast during the draft. And it used to make sense, and anymore it just kind of bothers me because I'm like, man, Stanford's not even really relevant anymore. They don't put dudes in the NFL. He's well-spoken. I get it. But, like, it's a tremendous marketing opportunity for Stanford football to have, like, David Shaw up there. And it's like Marcus Freeman, handsome dude, charismatic. It's like, man, we could have got Marcus Freeman up there, you know, for the second round or whatever, analyzing players, and it's just a great marketing opportunity. I'm like –
that's coming.
Well, David Shaw might have just bought himself another year, you know.
But I mean, I'm just saying, in general, he's doing a lot. He does a lot of media rounds.
Yeah,
in the offseason.
Great with the media, not great in post game. I think I'm learning to take Marcus Freeman's post game, and he's still learning on the job. Take his post game comments kind of with a grain of salt.
He's not. It's just gonna be very politically correct. Not throwing anyone under the bus. Not making any big.
Well, I struggle with that, Mike.
Headlines. I don't want to spend much time on this because I think we could talk about it for a while, but where's this comment? This scan, the look over and check with me thing. I loved it when I played. Like that was new when I played in high school ball. We would do that. We would line up and you know, they would hold up the board and have stuff. So you'd check to a new play. That was great for me because most of my receptions were on what we call dash sail right out of trips. I was the far receiver on the right. And, you know, if they were playing cover three and they were 10 yards off of me, cause I was just a speedster and, you know, they were needed to give me cushion, completely joking, that we would just always check to this dash right. And they would just throw me this hitch and I pick up 10 yards. So it works in that sense, but you can't rely on it all damn game. Especially in a freaking 2-minute drive, you can't do that. So just a no, Any other?
You cannot do that in a 2 minute drive.
You can't.
Yeah, you know, there should be a separate script for that 2 minute drive. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, on my play sheet, you know, here's my 2 minute drive play calls, whatever. Like that's the way that should operate.
Yeah.
It's just another thing he's trying, man. You know, 12 personnel, 22 personnel, 11, 12, five wides. It's just another thing. And it's like, you know, I don't know where it was born out of, you know, and it's not working. Like we're not putting more points on the board. So it's strange to me. The kids don't seem to be a fan of it. I think it's a buzzkill in terms of the vibe of the game and the flow of the game. Absolutely.
All right, Adam says, do you think, is there a reason Coach O has been hanging out at Notre Dame? Mike, can you put a tinfoil hat on? Do you got any conspiracies here? Is Coach O coming to Notre Dame?
It'd be an odd fit, but I believe, Adam, the reason that he's around is his children are trying to get into coaching. So when we saw, I think Coach O made his rounds like during the spring, like he was at more than one school. And I think that's Coach O kind of like glad handing with some coaches and trying to make some inroads for his sons.
He's been everywhere.
So, and hell, man, he just got a nice little buyout. He's just out there, you know, taking in a Notre Dame game for all I know. But I don't think, great recruiter. Great recruiter. So, maybe he brings a little bit of like a cool factor and a little bit of like authenticity to a Notre Dame. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be on the staff anytime soon. Be a weird fit, but I'd be for it.
Go Irish says, how important are things like recent Heismans and Natties to recruits? I haven't ever covered a school that had just won a national championship, so I can't say. I did cover Louisville after Lamar Jackson won a Heisman. There was a ton of excitement there, but Lamar Jackson was more than a Heisman winner. That dude was an icon. So that was, I mean, you talk to recruits and when, you know, random kid gets an offer from Louisville 2 years after Lamar Jackson wins the Heisman, I would ask them, hey, what do you know about Louisville? Lamar Jackson. So I think it's a thing that helps from the branding standpoint. Like right now, if Notre Dame offers a kid who doesn't really know a lot about the Irish, they still know about the tradition, the academics. It could be something to kind of add in there, like, oh yeah, that when they had Steve Angeli win three straight Heismans, like that was a big deal. Okay, there it is. Okay.
No, I was just considering. Yeah. Sometimes I'm not even listening to you. I'm just trying to think this through. I think national championships obviously matter. I think just overall relevance matters. And I just like, that's why the way this season unfolded is just so shitty, because it's like, you know, with Coach Freeman and all the things that he brings to the table from like he's just so marketable. And like, man, I was like, man, Notre Dame's about to be like legit, you know? And that hasn't been the case, but I think overall relevance, I think first round draft picks matter. I think Dodge Hellcats matter, you know? I think bags of money matter.
Yeah.
But like I can, you know, no disrespect to anybody, but like when I was there, they would bring some of the Heisman Trophy winners around, you know, and it's just like they're old men, right? And like it's just, it doesn't resonate with a kid. I mean, these kids are incredibly selfish, and I don't really fault them for that. But yeah, I think relevance, first round draft picks matter more so than any. Like, so Notre Dame can be like, dude, we've got the most active players in the NFL. If they weren't a first round draft pick, kids don't care.
Got a really
good. When all these kids think, real quick, Mike, too, like, yep, when all these kids, and I was guilty of this, when all these kids think about, oh, I want to play in the NFL, they don't envision themselves being a fifth round pick, right? They imagine themselves walking across the stage in, you know, New York or wherever. So that's really what resonates with kids is first round picks and just overall relevance. So yeah,
I think this is an interesting one because I've seen this a lot on our loose emoji message board at Blue and Gold. People talking about comparing Freeman to the Willingham era. Of course, that was your heyday, Mr. Goolsby. any thoughts on this comparison?
I kind of want to stay away from that. I haven't been around Coach Freeman enough to know. I think that Coach Willingham was a fraud.
And well, that's not staying away from it.
Well, I don't want to get too into the similarities because I don't know enough about Freeman, but I don't think that Freeman is as fraudulent as Willingham was and probably still is. I think he's coaching golf at Stanford. He had a couple nice buyouts too, right? But Willingham, one of Willingham's biggest issues was like his staff was bad, like laughably bad. And I don't think that that's the case with Freeman. I think that Willingham was a lazy recruiter. Again, loves golf. I don't think Coach Freeman plays golf. You know, if you ever hire a head coach and they play golf, that's like a red flag. I want a head coach that doesn't play golf. So I think that Freeman's a better recruiter. I think he has a better staff. And I think he's a better coach. So, but I can see the similarities. The similarities are born out of, Mike, the level of excitement for the hire, right? They're both African-American. I mean, you gotta say it, right? So that's a thing that's similar, I guess. But I think that Freeman's a much better coach for all the things I just said, recruiting staff, just a coach, doesn't play golf. I think that Freeman's going to do a much better job. And more importantly, man, we hired Freeman primarily to recruit, you know? And I think that we've probably left Coach Reese a little bit unchecked. I don't think there's a lot of like looking over Coach Reese's shoulders, and that's a respect thing from Coach Freeman. But that's probably got to change. But no, I wouldn't make that comparison just yet. I really wouldn't.
Okay. Super chats are still rolling in. Which, by the way, Tyron Willingham, 2014, was a member of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. I can't believe that he was a volunteer coach on the Stanford women's golf team in 2011, but he was doing that. But he has not coached since 2010. So
he's been unemployed and lives in Palo Alto, California. Not the cheapest place in the world to live, you know? So what was his record at Washington when he left Notre Dame? Everybody was up in arms. And I don't think he won a game in 2 years at Washington.
Here's each season from 05 to 08. 2-9, 5-7, 4-9, 0-12, 11-37 overall.
And people were upset when he got fired. Anyways, that's my coach.
Beefsticks back. Beefstick says, I'm worried watching the games every Saturday because my wife gives me Freeman's googly eyes. How many years can he give Notre Dame? 5+10. 5+ ?10? That was the better way to phrase it.
Well, you got to give him, Mike, we talked about this, just the human element of all of this. Like, he's learning on the fly, and Notre Dame is a very difficult place to do that. I'd like to see him stay here. As long as the recruiting classes are coming in and we're retaining those kids, we find a different play caller, see what C.J. Carr – I mean, if C.J. Carr or Tyler Buckner, if they turn out, we're it's a completely different landscape for the next, you know, so many years of his tenure. But I don't know what I'm going to be doing in 5 years, Mike. I can't answer what Freeman's going to be doing. You feel me?
Hopefully I'm covering – you know, 4 straight number one recruiting classes for the Irish.
Yeah, man.
And we're doing this show until we're 60. Where you already agreed on that. Or till you're 60. You've got a few years on me. So how about till you're 60?
Yeah, it's 20 years from now.
Can you commit?
I'm gonna be doing it in a tiny house, like a real tiny house, when I'm 60. In the woods somewhere.
Mike Nolan says, were the last 2-minute decisions on the offensive coordinator or quarterback had guys running deep, or quarterback looks mare with defense dropping 7-8, last play had Styles open behind Thomas?
Were the last 2-minute decisions on OC or quarterback had guys running deeper? Last play had Styles. Yeah. I think that Styles – so let's start with the last play. I think there might have been like a little bit of a bust because those two, the spacing on those two routes, it was wonky. It didn't look right to me. But yeah, Styles was open. Ironically, Mayer wasn't on the play on the field for that fourth and eight. I went back and watched like three times. I think that there was a single isolated tight end to Stanford sideline, and I believe it was Mitch Evans, based off the way that they were dressed. Mitch Evans wears like a sleeve on his leg. So Mayer wasn't on the field for that fourth and eight. But going back to what we talked about earlier, like whose fault is it as the quarterback or as the OC? That's on the OC because there was no script. We weren't prepared for that scenario. I mean, folks, we had 2.5 minutes left on the clock. It took us a full minute to go 15 yards.
Yeah.
So that's on the offensive coordinator. And I don't think Reese trusts Pine to push a ball 50 yards downfield. So that's what we tend to do is guys go vertical and then you'll have some sort of like a crosser. Everybody just runs the safeties off and you've got a crosser underneath, which tends to be a mare. And it was Jaden Thomas last week. So if we can't do that, he runs stop routes. But I mean, I think those in breaking, working in the middle of the field, we've been talking about this since last year. You got to work the middle of the field. That's the easiest throw for a quarterback to make is anything in breaking. So hopefully that changes.
Sure. We'll say for folks who maybe you just started tuning in here in the past 10 minutes or so, after we're done, so we're only going to go a couple more minutes. We would love for you to.
That's Singer's call, folks, not mine. I'll be here all night.
I mean, I got things to do.
I'm just busting your balls.
Well, that's my train of thought there, Goolsby. Yeah, please rewatch. We covered a ton of good stuff, and you know, just it's we haven't really even touched on the defense much. It's really just been about Reese Pine and Freeman, but that's what people want to talk about. But we've
It's same old on defense. But also, if you rewatch it, hit the like button. We're trying to grow this thing.
Yes, please do. That's what I was.
And going. I think the bigger this thing gets, the more resources we get. I can finally get out of my tiny house. You know, get a little studio or something. I don't live in a tiny house, but it's just the way the top floor of the house is. But defense is same old, same old. I thought the defensive line played great. Played really hard. I think schematically our linebackers, it's off. I don't really put it on them. Marist, you know, he's had four tackles this week. Bertrand played hard. No tip passes, no interceptions. It's more the same. One sack. Isaiah Foskey, again, he's like, dude's playing hard. He just doesn't get to the quarterback. Riley Mills played excellent. I thought Chris Smith played freaking great. I thought Gabe Rubio played freaking great. I thought our coverage, our corners were played really, really well. I mean, they just made some fantastic catches, but they played really well. I thought Xavier Watts screwed up when we were playing that second quarter or something. Clarence Lewis was playing slot. He gave up like a skinny post. That's on X Watts. He's still learning. It looked like we were in cover four and he cheated over to the number one receiver. But at the end of the day, Mike, like when you're in these, like we're going into halftime, we're down 10 to nothing. Like the defensive players to me, like you're sitting in your locker at halftime, like, I gotta make a fucking play. Something's gotta give here. So I gotta make a play. And nobody ever really seems to on the defensive side of the ball take it upon themselves to like change the way the game's playing out. So,
all right, two super chats, Mr. Goolsby from Cole says, you kind of thought you said earlier in the show you don't think Reese is going to be here next season. Mm-hmm. But Cole asked, do you believe that Reese should be replaced? He said, that kind of sounds like the feeling I'm getting from you.
I would say so. I mean, yes.
Why?
I think it needs to be a mutual split because 23 points a game ain't gonna cut it. It ain't gonna cut it. And like I said, I mean the quarterback recruiting, the recruiting in general. And he's like, it's just a weird tie to Brian Kelly. You know, like, I don't know how to explain that. Like, I can't come up with a clever analogy, but like, you know, you played for and coached underneath Brian Kelly and you're still here. It's just awkward.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he should be gone after this year. And I think it'll be a mutual thing. And I think Coach Reese, he's making $2 million a year. I think he'll be just fine. He'll land right on his feet somewhere.
John says get a haircut, Singer. Tuesday, I'm telling you guys. When you see me on that live show Wednesday night with Tim Hyde, I'll be a new man.
You're not going to be a new man until you get rid of that goatee, bro.
You don't like the goatee, huh?
Just go full beard.
I can't. Well, I did shave the other day, but it's patchy. It's very disappointing.
I
know.
Where are we at, Mike? Anything else going on?
Yeah, I mean, these people are keeping the show alive with the super chats. We do appreciate it. Hey, Mike, let's go then.
Rapid fire.
All right. Appreciate the super sticker, but I don't see a comment. So if you got one, go ahead and drop it. Wicked Bronco Production. My man is back. I still have faith in Freeman. I will put more blame on Reese. Get a guy like the offense coordinator from TCU or some high-powered offense. If recruiting keeps up the way it is, I have faith in a national championship. Hashtag don't miss Brian Kelly.
I would agree entirely. Yeah, I mean, I'm not questioning Freeman. And again, if Freeman wasn't a world-class recruiter, I would have a different sentiment. But he's learning on the fly, and I do think that he probably put too much trust into Coach Reese. And he probably respected Coach Reese too much. And they're both young coaches making their way, cutting their teeth. And it'd be a weird dynamic if he was checking Coach Reese. And Coach Reese, in a way, did him a solid by staying as opposed to going to LSU. So the whole thing's a little messy, like when you get into, like, again, the human element of it. But I think, yeah, I think it'll be a mutual breakup. And Coach Reese will probably end up in the NFL. And God bless him. You know, I'm rooting for him. But it's not working. You're not scoring enough points.
Man, I don't think we've ever had an hour and 16-minute show, but we are not slowing down.
Fire away, man.
All right. F, Mary, Kill. Weiss, Holtz, Freeman. Mike, you don't have to entertain this if you don't want to. Beefstick, you're killing me, man.
Let's move on.
Sorry, Beefstick. Appreciate the super chat, though. You got to laugh at a Singer. John says Reese is still
not out of me. Grow up, dude. Not out of me.
Poor Beefstick. You made me laugh, Beefstick. Jonathan says it's embarrassing.
You're 30 years old, Beefstick. Grow up, but go ahead.
Yeah, you're 30, Beefstick. O-line's terrible, he says. Which we haven't really talked about the O-line either. Because I'm pretty sure all the O-line's faults are really just Pines. But he says can't convert a third or fourth and one, unacceptable.
I was texting Tim Hyde this. I mean, there's a lot of bad football in college. Like, you know, and I know a little bit about football, right? It's just like, man, this is bad football, whether it's Notre Dame or any other kind of random game that you turn on, with the exception of, like, you know, the and that was another thing. You turn off the Bama-Tennessee game and you turn on this dumpster fire.
Yeah.
And it was just like, what a stark contrast. And it shows you how far you got to go. But yeah, I think if I was Coach Reese, me personally, I would feel a little bit of guilt in terms of, like, yeah, this is, you're stealing from the program. You know, I mean, pay me $2 million to go be the OC at Notre Dame. I won't sleep all week, you know. And I'd just be, you know, I'd be, you know, what an opportunity. So,
Oh, God. Oh, man. Average Joe, did Swarbrick undercut Freeman by hiring Reese, then consulting him on the head coach hire? Should Notre Dame admin bring in former head coach to get Freeman through learning curve ASAP? Well, Freeman hired Al Golden, who's a former head coach. I don't think
he undercut him. I think that,
yeah,
I think Swarbrick probably was trying to find some stability. You know, because again, this is a lot of recruiting. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty when a coach, like, dips out unceremoniously, like Coach Kelly did. So I could understand why Jack Swarbrick would want to lock in Reese just to get some stability. I believe that to be the case. But I don't like to get into some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think it's just so just making crap up. I mean, how do we know that Freeman was not a part of Reese? Even if they announced Reese before, I mean, we know what Notre Dame's hiring process can be slow. So I don't know.
Again, it's
do appreciate the super chat average, Joe.
Yeah, it's year one. You've got a backup quarterback that's 5'9". I mean, it ain't going to be pretty. But again, it's like the offense is if we just stick, if we're going to score 23 points a game, let's just do it on the ground and a few play action shots. And we've got, I think, enough talent at the wide receiver position that a guy can get loose once or twice a game. Now, can our quarterback get him the ball? It remains to be seen.
All right, Mike had a super chat. Here's his question with it. Should we be playing more freshmen this year to get them experience?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right, this is last one. This is it. Appreciate everybody. My cat just came in here, and I know his face. He wants food. That's the face he always has, but whatever. Beefstick says, I want to make Goolsby laugh, judging by how immature I am. I should probably just love my wife and feed my son. Have a good night. I think with that, we're going to sign off. Beefstick, appreciate the support tonight. Everybody, fun show, lively show. Again, if you're just now tuning in here recently, we usually don't get as silly as we have in the past 10 minutes or so. So just go ahead and rewind, watch the beginning. If you're listening back via podcast, appreciate you. If you're watching back via YouTube and you stuck around to an hour and 20 minutes and you are a dedicated Mike Goolsby show fan. So we do appreciate it. Hit that thumbs up before we get out of here.
Hit the thumbs up. Would you already?
All right, Mike, you got 10 seconds. Matthew, appreciate the super chat. Our team just looked happy to be there. How can the energy be so flat? Thousands would give their left arm to play for Notre Dame football.
When we figure out that answer, I mean, Notre Dame might win a national championship, but it's something about Notre Dame Stadium. It's a mix of the weather can be tough. The fans aren't great. I mean, I played at Tennessee, that same stadium that you saw the Bama game. I played there, a night game, 107,000 drunk rednecks. Blows Notre Dame Stadium out of the water. Blows them out of the water. I mean, they're in completely different stratospheres in terms of a game day environment. Completely different. So that's some of that's on the fan base, and they can come for me. Don't care. That's part of it. And sometimes I think that's why we play better on the road. But that was a night game, so it's tough. And then the other element is, you know, these teams that they come in here. And a team like a Stanford, it's a perfect example. Like, they're high academic kids. Notre Dame probably didn't recruit 99% of these kids, and they got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. Teams play, they just play up when they come into the stadium. And sometimes we play a little bit flat, and it's been a bad mix, you know? All right, let's get out of here. Beefsticks band, by the way. Get a new name. It's my show, Beefstick. Get out of here.
All right, everybody. Appreciate it. Signing off, Mike Goolsby, Mike Singer. We'll catch you next Sunday.